This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome back to The Cinnamon Effect. I'm Kimberly Hand, and today I'm here with Katie Hardy.
Hey there, and welcome to The Cinnamon Effect podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Hand, and I'm thrilled to have you with me on this vibrant journey of discovery and growth. This podcast is your go-to space for embracing intention, where you'll find clarity on your unique path, deepen those meaningful connections, and unleash your creativity like never before. We'll explore how to build unshakable confidence and celebrate the beauty of gratitude, all while savoring the calm that consistency brings to our lives. Thank you for being with me. Let's sprinkle a little cinnamon into your day and make life sweeter, healthier, and more fulfilling.
Katie Hardy is a board-certified holistic nutritionist and FDN practitioner who helps high performers reclaim their energy, optimize nutrition, and achieve lasting results through bio-individual, science-driven programs. She combines her lived experience as an athlete, corporate professional, and mom with advanced training in nutrition, performance psychology, and functional health. Her programs integrate functional labs, personalized nutrition, and intentional recovery to restore gut and hormonal health, prevent burnout, and build resilience. Welcome to the podcast, Katie.
Thank you so much for having me.
All the way from Colorado. We were talking about where you're located, and I've actually been to the coolest ranch right down the road from you, Devil's Thumb Ranch. Such a great place.
Yes. It's a really cool little hidden special spot. So that's very cool that you've been here.
I know. Very, very cool. So you have so much background in so many different things. So I would love to know kind of your story and your evolution. What did you start as? Did you start as a chef or nutritionist? Like how did your journey begin?
Yeah, it started unplanned in corporate America. And my background from undergrad was psychology and exercise science. I had all the science math things and then ended up not really having a clear picture of what I wanted to do. So found myself in corporate America, not wanting to climb that ladder. So I was pretty miserable there. And I was like, I have to have something I enjoy during the day. So I was like, I'm just going to study for a personal training exam. So that led to strength and conditioning. It led to personal training, strength and conditioning, then nutrition, and eventually culinary school, which I never thought I would have done. And so just kind of layered on different formal education programs and then created my own business so I could apply it with people to kind of help them focus on their health and wellness and just be better versions of themselves.
I love that. Now, you work with a lot of high performing individuals. And how do you tailor these programs for people with all of this background knowledge that you have? What is kind of your first step with your clients?
So high performers can be in different realms. Some of it's they're wanting to perform athletically at a higher level. Some it's more professionally and just have that energy and that mental edge. And some people it's just in their personal lives and want to be a better person for their partner, their kids, their parents, whoever it is, themselves. And regardless of the application, it really starts with energy management from my lens that I work with. So really helping people dial in that physical foundation base to have stable energy levels throughout the day. And then, we tap into the hows and what's through awareness. And part of that's just like understanding the feedback our body's always giving us that we've kind of been trained to ignore or push through. And part of that's through knowledge of some biofeedback or functional labs, depending on which angles people are most interested in.
What kind of labs are you, first of all, do you work with men and women? Are you focusing on a female lab work, hormones, that kind of thing?
Yep. So it's not really gender or age specific. It's more that mindset. So it's people who are starters. They have that growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And they just really want to be open to maybe new paradigms and doing things differently. Because a lot of the people I work with are really great at following programs. The problem's been the programs are programmed for the masses and not that specific individual. And so as far as the labs that we do, you know, I start with the biofeedback with like continuous glucose monitors, CGMs. And then if people want to get into labs, I don't do labs with everybody, but that is an option. But I do get into stool tests to understand the gut health, both like balance of the microbiome, the bacteria, as well as the gut functioning, how well we're digesting, absorbing the nutrients we are eating. And then I do get into hormones. So a Dutch is what I use for urine and saliva. And then I pair that with extensive blood work. And then if people want to go above and beyond, we can do total toxin panels, food sensitivities, you know, there's more. But those are kind of my foundational ones if people want to dive into the lab realm and kind of get some specific data on themselves. So the plan that they're going to, you know, follow really well is actually going to work well because it's for them and not for the other part of the population that maybe is intended for, that they don't fall into that category.
And this is a full comprehensive plan with exercise plan, food, like every meal planned out. Like I find that a lot of plans that people will put together, it's like, you can eat these foods, right? And to me, that's overwhelming, and it still requires me to try and figure out exactly what I should be eating. I'm still like at a loss, you know?
Totally. Yeah, and everybody's in a different spot. So I kind of play off of where they're at, because some people do want more general, like the foods. But for me, I'm one of those people, I'm like, I want like an actual application to that. Like, what does that mean? Like, what does that look like on a plate? And so I have some different programs, depending on if people are a little bit newer to the kitchen or a little more adventuresome in the kitchen. And, you know, really, you know, we're all different. Like, there isn't one meal plan that works for everybody. So I have different ways that we kind of figure out the best foods for each person, as well as the best ratios of carbohydrates, proteins, fats for each person, so they feel really satiated and have that positive mental energy and focus throughout the day versus having those big energy spikes and dips. So yes, it can get as detailed as people want it to, or keep it a little more broad if they're like, yeah, I kind of know how to run with this. I just want general framework. So,
yeah. What would be a typical meal plan or like the typical day in the life of a, you know, mid-40s female with most likely some hormonal issues and gut issues? Because I feel like everyone has that. Am I wrong?
What's the typical one that results in that, or the typical one that would help support that?
Like, how should we be eating?
Comparison to verify. So what I typically see is people having coffee or nothing, or maybe some yogurt with, you know, some granola. And that's kind of it up until lunchtime, and then kind of picking at snacks throughout the day, feeling hungry or distracted because they're not really getting that, you know, nutrition. Whereas the opposite side of that is to at some point in the morning, ideally before 10, get something substantial, not snacky, but as an actual meal. And this is where I see most women not prioritizing themselves because they're taking care of, you know, the dogs, their partners, their spouses, their kids, and they tend to come last. So it's really about prioritizing themselves and their needs to have a meal and also sit down to eat the meal, not be wandering around the island or eating it in the car, because nutrition isn't just what we eat, but it's what we eat, digest, and absorb. And it's just as much how we eat. So if we're in this constant like fight or flight state, and that can just mean driving in your car, you might not feel like that's a stressful situation, but you're in a go mode. You're not sit and absorb and receive. So we really need to be in a spot if we're wanting to avoid those gut situations or those gut issues you mentioned, to create the digestive enzymes, the pancreatic enzymes, the hydrochloric acid, to properly break down the food, we need to start above that with chewing all the way, and then giving some time for that to churn, digest, absorb. And we that does two things. One, we're getting the right types of foods into our body. But two, we're breaking it down small enough where it actually gets into our cells. Because what happens if we're like chomp, chomp, swallow, as we're running out the door, you have these huge chunks of food that go undigested, and that creates food for bacteria that then creates gas, bloat, all the things that we don't love. And so that's part of the gut stuff that also feeds into hormones, because if, you know, the foundation of whether it's hormones or immune cells or digestive enzymes, you need the amino acids. And in order to have the amino acids, you need to A, have the right amount of input, which means, you know, having some sort of protein at each meal, not, you know, Starbucks with like syrup, or yogurt really doesn't have much protein. You know, just like having an actual meal that has enough of the nutrients that our bodies are asking for come in, but also have it broken down. Because when we don't get the right amount of amino acids into our cells, it impacts negatively our hormone production. So that's where we tend to see deficient amounts of hormones. And when we're looking, that's sex hormones. When we're looking at stress hormones that are kind of upstream of the sex hormones, the not eating, the not absorbing, going too long between meals, having too many sugary things, all of those are stress response, you know, situations that can throw off our, it's the pattern that we want to see, our HPA, hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal axis. There's a certain pattern we expect to see throughout the day, and it can throw off the pattern as well as the amounts of cortisol being produced. So yes, all that affects the hormones and the gut.
It actually starts with what you're saying is sometimes what I do in the morning. I have not even had a sip of water, and I've gotten my son ready and he's had breakfast, and, you know, my husband's out the door and I haven't even had taken a drink yet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's so common with women because, well, A, you're rewarded for it. People appreciate it. And I think women particularly tend to be a little bit more in that people pleasing category, and maybe, you know, don't consider their own self-worth. And I think that's a big thing when it comes to taking care of our health, is our, you know, we have to fill our cup before we can give our best to others. There's kind of like the airplane, how they say, put your mask on before you help young children or anybody else around you. You have to do that. And it's really hard in our culture, I think, to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about chewing the food and that it all really starts there. Again, it's something so simple. I feel like from talking to so many experts like yourself, it's really these simple adjustments that we can make. So it's not flying out the door. And like you said, you may not even feel like you're stressed out. Like, you might not feel like you're stressed out when you're driving your child to school, but you are. You're eating on the go. You're not sitting there. You're not savoring your food. You're certainly not chewing it well enough. You're distracted. You're doing all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I love that you pointed that out, because that is something that I think about that, because I've been told that by so many people that, you know, stop, chew your food, you know, do all these things, but I don't always do it. So really getting into the habit. Is there a certain kind of like rule of thumb as to how well, because maybe people don't even think that they're not chewing their food well enough, right?
And well, it all starts with, right? If you've never heard, I mean, it sounds so obvious, chew your food. Well, duh, like who doesn't chew their food? And have you ever counted how many times you chew your bite before you swallow it? Have you?
No.
So, you have any guesses to how many chews would be optimal for a bite of food?
Actually, I feel like I've heard it's maybe somewhere of 20 to 30.
Yeah, 20 to 40, depending on what the thing is, of course, right?
Yes.
So, you know, you want to get it down to that, like, really applesauce-y, you know, consistency. So obviously a piece of steak is probably going to require a few more chews than something that's starting off soft. But you think about, If you first sit down to your next meal, start counting. And I bet most people aren't getting past 10. And that might even be a stretch. So just by doubling it, you are, you know, if you're looking at food as like a surface surface area, the smaller you get the surface area, the more impactful those digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid are going to be at finalizing that breakdown, which is going to, you know, what happens is the food particles are passing through like into the cell at, you know, that cellular level, like one cell size. So you want it smaller than that. You don't want it going between the cells. That's when we have that leaky gut situation that we don't love. And so when our food particles are too big to fit into the cell, then our cells are still feeling like they're hungry. So you might be eating the right things, but if your cells don't receive it, they're still telling you, hey, I need more food. I'm so hungry. And guess what? I haven't had anything, especially protein. Now I'm in a stress state. I want something sweet. And so that can be part of the reason we get into those sweet cravings. And I often see lower hormone levels with people who have poorer digestive function. So they do tend to go hand in hand. And then not having those nutrients available at the cellular level is a stressor on the body. So then it further throws off that stress, or sorry, the stress hormone balance, which affects the sex hormone balance.
Now, what about when you're not chewing? So say you're, so I want to actually ask a question about a yogurt bowl, because you said something about yogurt. But I also want to know, like, if you enjoy smoothies, but you're not chewing anything. I mean, is there something wrong with that because you're not actually committing the chewing action, or are those
That's
okay
a great point.
First thing in the morning?
The act of chewing actually stimulates, it goes through a nerve that stimulates your digestive enzymes to be produced. So ideally, we want foods that we have to chew versus things that you drink that are pre-ground up. So from, you know, more like Eastern philosophy approach, they don't love smoothies. They don't love like powders and all the things that we've grown to love as being convenient.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Convenient, right? And so all that can, and they're cold, which can be jarring on the GI tract and slow digestion. So there's ideal, which would be warm meals that you sit down to eat and, you know, based around protein, veggies, and some fat. And then there's, you know, some sort of blending with what is your reality, driving to sports practices and like meetings and, you know, how we schedule our day. So I kind of use meals as plan A. And then if you're in a super jam, then maybe like a shake or something like that as filling in the gaps, but not as your primary go-to.
And maybe, is it true? Because I know with my acupuncturist, like, especially warm in the morning is like more important to do it then. So if I was, she says, if you're going to have a smoothie, because she knows I like smoothies, just have it later in the day or as a snack, not necessarily to start my morning with that cold
right.
smoothie.
And you have warming spices, so ginger, cinnamon, or if you like bone broth, that's also very quick and also more in that savory category. Still has protein. You can add some salt, lemon, or lime to it to make it taste way better. And that can have that warming effect where it kind of it's doing exactly what it sounds like, warming up your digestive function versus like shutting it down and like constricting it.
with the cold. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I like the bone broth. I'm coming around to that. I don't always want something like savory. I'm one of those people, I wake up and I crave sweet. I feel like maybe a lot of people are like that because they drink their coffee with cream and sugar or whatnot. I don't drink coffee, but I do kind of crave something sweeter in the morning. Why is that happening to me?
Well, from the stomach perspective, if you're going back to the Chinese medicine, it actually is okay with a little bit sweeter, meaning more like fruit, you know, you know, something along those lines, or grains are considered sweet. So that perspective will say have protein and grains for breakfast. And also part of it, I think, is just our culture. We've been trained that dessert is appropriate for breakfast. With cereals and waffles and in the, like the coffees you mentioned with the syrups and or sugars. And a lot of places in the world will have congee or like the soups, savory things, which is actually what I like to recommend if that works for people, is start shifting some meals more in that savory direction, because that does stabilize those blood sugar levels and then that energy throughout the morning, which then reduces the snacking that people need, or the energy drop, or the lack of focus. And so it can be really supportive, but like anything, it's different than maybe what people are used to. It's just a mental shift just as much as anything. And so, yeah, you can totally get a sweet thing from, you know, apple or berries or pears or oatmeal, and pair it with some protein.
Okay. So oatmeal. So maybe we take our oatmeal, we can add some fruit to it. How are you going to add the protein? Like maybe a nut butter, or would you add like a protein powder to it, or no, you're not into that?
You could. I would do like eggs or bacon or sausage. And again, more on that savory side. So the sweet part is the oats. So even though it sounds savory, oats are carbohydrates, and that falls in that sweet category. We're just so way off to the edge of the spectrum of being of the sweet spectrum that we don't tend to think of oats as being sweet, but they really are, because they spike. Same with rice. All those are sweet foods, even though they might have salt on them or with them. But it has like, if, have you ever worn a CGM?
No, I haven't. And I feel like I need to do that. My downfall is that I'm allergic to eggs. And so eggs, that's big source of protein, big, you know, breakfast food that I just can't have. And so I really struggle at the breakfast time because I'm like, what am I supposed to eat, you know?
Yeah. And that's common. People either are, you know, if they're allergic to it, or their stomach might get upset, or they don't like them. Do you like breakfast sausages or anything in that category, or not really?
I do. I do. I've come to I kind of force myself to do it, but I've started eating more of that in the morning. Yeah, because you're trying to avoid that glucose spike, right? First thing.
Or balance it, you know, like kind of, if it's just carbohydrates, there'll be a big spike and drop. You can have the same carbohydrates paired with some protein and or fat, and that modulates it a bit. So it's a little more mellow. So it's not saying don't have the thing. It's have it with something that slows down the response. So breakfast sausage links, you know, obviously the well-sourced ones that don't have all the added sugars and added nitrates and all the things. But whether it's breakfast sausage links, or something that we like to do is ground. It could be breakfast sausage. It could be chorizo. It could be Italian sausage. It could be a totally different, if you don't like pork, it could be ground chicken or turkey or something. But a good fall one is just whatever the ground meat you like, and then shredded carrots and apples. It's three ingredients, and you get a little sweetness from the apple. And then carrots are root veggies, so those are also a little bit sweet. So that is also supportive to the stomach. It's warm. You can make it in less than 5 minutes. You can make it the night before. You can have it for breakfast, lunch, dinner, or a snack. So it's pretty versatile. So that's like an easy go-to to just kind of like change it up and not have eggs involved.
Yes, yes. But that's creative and simple, and it's something that I would not think to do at all.
Yeah. thinking out of the box a lot of times because, you know, I don't know if you ever read those, you know, kids magazines or parents magazines for people who have kids. All the things marketed in there are going to be super processed, super sweet, but that's what is normalized as that's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I was the same way. I was like, oh, you're, you know, supposed to do the pouches and supposed to do the chicken nuggets and supposed to do the cereals. And then I was like, there's no rule you have to do that. That's just like really good marketing.
Yeah.
That's not actually like in the child's best interest or the parent who has to deal with their behavior afterward. That's just marketing.
So true. It's been so ingrained in us. And I guess that's how I grew up, you know, eating like a lot of people. So have soup for breakfast, like have something savory. Or I actually, it's funny because I suggested to my son the other day, he didn't want anything for breakfast. Like everything I suggested, he was like, no. And then I said, what about we've got chicken noodle soup in the fridge? And he was just like, what? Like that yeah. There couldn't be anything more strange, you know, that I could have suggested. And I was like, no, you can have chicken noodle soup for breakfast if you want it. But, you know, I don't typically do that for myself. So I need to take my own advice, you know, eating something different.
And it actually can be a huge time saver because that's something we're all tied on. And so you can just have lunch or dinner leftovers for breakfast and have it be really quick. Or if it's part of the dinner leftovers, you know, throw some of that breakfast sausage, or for people who like eggs, throw like, you know, some fried eggs or scrambled eggs with it. You could change up the protein and keep the sides. So it actually makes it so there's less work to be done. And you just get more nutrients because it isn't just the calories that we're looking for. It's more so the nutrients that come from whatever energy source we're putting in that we want to give us that solid, stable energy, but also the nutrients our body needs to do the processes it's trying to do.
Now, take us throughout the day, you know, lunch. Are you an advocate for 3 meals a day? And if we're eating it right, that's all we should really need? Or, you know, at some point, I felt like, oh, the 5 small meals a day, that's what everyone was talking about doing. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, well, I've done all those too, where you grew up eating the 3 square meals and then the bodybuilder thing came around and you're supposed to eat every 2 to 3 hours. And then that was also around the low fat, no fat era. So you, for somebody like me, I kind of had to eat all the time because I was hungry all the time, eating primarily carbs. And then I'm, you know, at this point, I have realized when you have the right types of food for your specific body, you only need 2 or 3 meals a day, depending on your goals, of course. If somebody's goal is to build muscle or gain weight, you do need to eat more than 3 meals, probably 4, 5, or 6, depending on the goal. And you don't always want to be in a growth mode because we do need times where we kind of clear out the garbage and the damaged cells and whatnot. And, you know, that can be through kind of seasonal cleanses or periods where if you're in sports, it's an off season where you're cutting fat or just kind of cleaning out. It's like house cleaning the body. And if the goal is to cut body fat, you don't want to eat all the time because every time you're eating, you're talking to the hormones, and insulin specifically is the growth one, which is going to tell you, hey, store this as fat. And so the more you can pull your fat for fuel versus store more as fuel, the more successful you'll be with the body fat loss. So it really depends on the person's goal. And so if they're just kind of maintaining, if that's the goal, then 3 meals should be sufficient. And when you have the right combos of food, the right amounts, the right types of the proteins, the right types of the carbs, the right types of the fats, you should feel really good for at least 3 hours, hopefully like even more. But that's kind of a good gauge as to how well your last meal was prepared for your body type. If a couple hours later, you're like, I'm physically full, but I'm craving something sweet. You didn't get something your body was asking for. Or I'm physically full and bloated. Okay, something wasn't working there. Or if you go 4 hours and you're like, man, I felt really dialed, focused, strong. That probably was a really good combo. And that's a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of tuning into the feedback our body's giving us and just being open to being aware, because so many of us have, like I was saying before, kind of get trained to tune it out, but then you just get so busy. You're eating while you're working. You're eating while you're doing something else. So you're not chewing. You're not really like present. You're not mindful or appreciative of the food you have. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, several hours later and you have no idea what you just ate. You know, if you ask people to fill out a food log from the prior day, most people are like, what did I eat? You know, or just like not that present. So then you ask people to go 2 weeks further back, which is what they're taking a lot of our nutritional recommendations off of, is people's recall. What did you eat two Tuesdays ago? You have no idea, right? But that's what a lot of those are based off of. So yeah, that's, you know, those are just some like ways that each person can kind of start learning about their specific bodies and needs.
Yeah, being more aware and intentional about it. I'm probably one of those people that some meals I can't even remember what I had. And how do you feel that you're, because I'm assuming that you enjoy cooking because you teach it and you're trained in it. How important do you think that is when it comes to health and wellness? I think a lot of people have a detachment of the cooking process, myself included. This is not all about me, but I just feel like a lot of people can relate to that, where there's no joy in fixing yourself meals, right?
Totally.
So how do we get there if that's not something that comes naturally to us, or it's not something that we enjoy?
Yeah, well, first of all, it is a huge, huge, huge part of the puzzle. And second, I did not grow up knowing how to cook anything. So I get not knowing what the heck to do. I did not know how to make rice until I was probably 30 years old. And I did culinary school. You know, it's the first time I didn't eat out of bags, boxes, or cans. I was only working out about 10% of what I used to do. And that's when it first clicked for me that it's not about working out more. It's not about working out harder. It's about eating quality food. And I was kind of worried like things would go downhill, you know, body composition wise. They did not. And I felt great. And it was so life-changing as far as knowing how to just look in the refrigerator and be like, let's just put something together. Because yes, we can all follow a recipe. What I really try to teach, whether it's kids to adults, is how to use your senses, how to use your intuition. It's kind of like a science project meets art creativity to create something. Because I realized when I was teaching a lot of kids, they actually didn't know how to read yet. So it didn't even make sense to print out recipes. And they loved the freedom of like, hey, take some of this, take a little bit of some of those. You pick which ones you want, smell them. And they love smelling all the spices. They love touching all the ingredients and just getting their hands in there, especially the kids who are maybe more on the ADHD side behavioral-wise. They were really into it, and they're not the kids who sit well in class, but they like, there's something about getting their hands into something and standing on their feet and physically doing versus just sitting there and receiving. They would just come to life, and my cooking classes actually would be more boys than girls. It was kind of wild. And
I love
that. Teach them how to use. Yeah. And, you know, do all the things that most of us don't grow up learning at home, and you don't grow up learning at school. So where do you learn these life skills, right? It's exactly that. It's a life skill that most people don't know, because we don't have like a great platform for it just to be modeled or taught anymore. And there's nothing more important than knowing how to give your body the fuel it needs to survive and thrive.
It's so true. It's where do you learn to cook? I mean, my mom, you know, I think she cooks more now than she did then. She just didn't really always enjoy it. And so maybe I kind of followed suit with that, that I just didn't really, I learned late. I remember cooking for like my first boyfriend and being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I made sausages, but I left the casing on. It was like disgusting, you know, it's like, what am I doing here? But it actually inspires me. I feel like I would want to go and take some culinary classes and maybe kind of foster. I have at times, I've done some plant-based cooking oriented classes years ago. And I, for some reason, I did really enjoy that. There was a sense of creativity, I guess, because you're making a meal from vegetables, essentially, and you have to be a little bit more creative with that, I felt like. But so you're inspiring me to want to learn more.
Well, it's that because I always think of cooking as like artwork you can eat. So it's kind of like a functional art project that then you don't have the clutter around, you know, afterward. So, I don't know. It's just, I think it's fun with there's so many things you can learn or teach through food and cooking, whether it's math, chemistry, science, history, you name the topic, you can integrate it through food. And that's something that came to life for me when I did culinary school, and how I got into it was not planned. I had a friend who was doing learning something new each month. And she's like, "Hey, I want to do this knife skills class." And I'm like, "What?" And I read the description. I'm like, "Yeah, I guess it does sound functional. It doesn't sound very fun, but I do want to hang out with you." And they're, you know, "Sure, why not? Like, they're serving some wine. Sure, we'll go do it." And I went to it, and it was a lot of veggies, like learning how to cut veggies. And we made these soups, and I'd never made soup before. And it tasted delicious because it was not like a canned soup. It was, we made everything into bone broth. And I was like, whoa, blown away. And I'm like, this is like functional. Like, you can learn how to be really efficient chopping and then put all these things in that you want or not the things that you don't want and season it the way you like it. So it tastes exactly how you love it. And at the end of it, they pitched their full-time culinary program because...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long distance relationship, becoming a first step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
They would offer rec classes, so it kind of planted the seed. That's intriguing. Okay. And then I did one more class, and at the end of it, one of the gals was talking about how she got into personal chefing out of that. And I'm like, wow, that would totally solve a lot of my clients' needs. They want good for you food, but at the end of the day, they go for convenience. So if you can make the convenient food good for you, they're going to eat it. So I ended up going down that route for a while and cooking for people. So I kind of made up on all the reps I missed out on the first 3 decades and just cooked for people for several years. And it was a cool blend of learning the classic French culinary techniques and then blending it with reality of how do we officially make this to move on to the next house and family's foods. And so that's where I got all my reps in, and it was so satisfying. And then I grew up a picky eater. So when I had kids, I was like, I don't want my kids to be how I was, because I realized I wasn't actually a picky eater. I just wasn't exposed to things. So I thought I was a picky eater. But you don't really crave the thing you've never had or heard of before. And then once I traveled around the world a bit more, I was like, oh, this is really different or cool. And I just had never tried it before. And I actually do like it. We didn't have it in Iowa, turns out, you know, in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. And so they would be in the kitchen with me. Remember those Bumbos? I don't know if you had that for your son or if they were done by then, but they'd sit on the counter and like be. And then I'd let them stand up there and make a mess and make eggs and learn. Like, they would always want to grab the knives. And so I was like, well, rather than hide the knife, let's just teach them how to properly use it. And now they're just in the kitchen, you know, kind of whipping up whatever they want, which is nice. Now they can return the favor.
Yeah, that's awesome. I saw, actually, you said that you had more boys than girls in your cooking classes. And I saw a video where you were making cider. You're cutting the apple. The kids are cutting the apples and they're smelling the cinnamon and they're doing that whole process. And you're right. It engages all the senses. With kids, where's a good place to start with them? You know, I feel like a lot of people maybe like go for baking. Like, I've done that with my son where we'll make muffins or something like that as it seems easier. But where do you like to start with kids?
I think anything that gets them having a positive association in a kitchen is a great spot. And yes, that does tend to be baking. And if that's like your gateway, then you can start transitioning into more of the savory things as we talked about with adults. Same concepts for kids, because If you've ever been around a two-year-old after they had a bunch of Halloween candy, it's super annoying. And I just have a very low like threshold or patience for that. So I'm like, I can't do this. So that can be special occasions before we do wind sprints, but it can't be like an everyday thing. I'm going to lose my mind. So kind of getting them with eggs, or it can be in the thing that you're making and have them sprinkle the salt on it. Like, how much salt do you think? Or if you're making a sauce or a dressing, you know, the seasoning triangle is salt, acid, fat. And that's where I'll start a lot of things. That's for savory. And salad dressing is what we first started with culinary school. And you do not need to go to culinary school to cook. It was something that came up. And so I try to teach people the Cliff Notes, because you can really get 10% of that, 5% of that, and be totally good to go. But salt, acid, fat is the number one thing that you start with. And when kids learn that, they're really intuitive and natural with it. And they're, because, you know, we've been taught, ooh, don't have too much salt. Like, do a quarter teaspoon of salt. I was like, if any recipe tells you to only use a quarter or half teaspoon of salt, it's going to suck. I'm going to tell you right now, you need more salt, but it needs to be quality salt. And so they naturally can taste that balance when it's right. And so just getting them to help you season it, be like, hey, what do you think it needs? And at first, whether it's kids or adults, some of them might not know, like, I don't know, it doesn't taste great, but I don't know what it needs. So the acid is what adds the pop. The fat is what kind of adds the mouth feel, like giving it body. But salt can do a little bit of that too. Salt is something that enhances all the other flavors. So, you know, when you bake, you also include salt. It has multi-purposes, you know, just that's one of them, enhancing the other flavors. And so the thing should never taste salty. It should just taste really good. And so when you can, and I always like have it go too far so they can be like, ooh, now that's salty. Okay, how do we correct it? Because it doesn't mean it's bad or that it's done. We just need to add more salt or acid and fat. And so it's kind of a balancing act. So they learn by taste, that sense. They learn by touching, by, you know, texture. A lot of kids, well, adults too, have a texture thing with food. So that can be a barrier to food being too mushy or too whatever. So if you can teach them, here's how you get it, that crisp or crunch or whatever it is you like, then they know how to fix it or adjust it. And so it gives them a lot of autonomy and kind of buy into the whole thing. And what I found with a lot of kids, once they start learning a little bit more than their parents, they're like, no, I got this. Let me show you how it's done. And you just got to roll with it as a parent. Be like, all right, show me. And they love to, you know, show the project or the creation they did. And it's, you know, even picky eaters, like so many people are like, my kid won't do it. They won't eat it. Every single time, like, I'm like, your kid just ate, well, made, and then ate because they wanted to try their creation. 3 egg bites. They're like, they don't even like eggs. I'm like, well, probably because they're not seasoned in the way that they like them. And so, or like avocado, like guacamole, because a lot of people just like smash the avocados, maybe put a little salt in, maybe a lime. But if it's turning brown, there's not enough lime. So it needs to have that really good balance. And there's some kids that they're like, oh, my kids don't like avocados. I'm like, they literally just ate 3 bowlfuls of the guacamole and all about the seasoning. So if somebody has a picky eater, there's totally hope for them. And just kind of giving them a little bit of like, hey, here's some tools or seasonings, spices that you could play with. Make it taste awesome. Like, the onus is on them to make it taste great. And we'll do competitions. So, you know, because especially boys like to, you know, win. And so then we'll vote and who's the best. So, you know, kind of make it like a sport. And especially for kids who aren't as into sports, it goes both ways. If they're into sports, it is the best way to support fueling your body with the things it needs more of. And if they're not into sports, it's another activity that can really play on that creativity, the, you know, the science people, you know, getting into the ratios and the chemical reactions. Eggs are awesome for all sorts of chemical reactions, but just, you know, the combinations of different ingredients. There's just so many things you can learn and just make it come to life and make it fun. So I think back to your point of, it's almost like a chore. It's not fun. how do you make it fun? Because if it's fun, people will gravitate toward it. If it's one more to-do item, then it's going to suck. And so, you know, that could be listening to a podcast, listening to some music you love, having a show on in the background, getting together with a friend or a partner or kids, and, you know, finding something together that you want to make and just kind of creating and exploring and see where it goes. And, you know, for people who are feeling short on time, it doesn't need to take a lot of time. It can literally be searing a protein, you know, sauteing some veggie really quick and having some rice or potatoes going while you're doing those things. And then it's all done and just making enough extra. So then you're constantly just like, oh, I'll add the sausage to that or the eggs to this for breakfast. And you're just kind of constantly rotating through what's around versus like, well, now what do I do for this meal? Because that feels like a heavy production.
Totally. You're really inspiring me. I'm thinking, what if we just cooked a meal as a family at least one night a week? You know, maybe it's on the weekend and instead of going out, but like making sure everyone has a job and the dinner and doing it all together and maybe cultivating. I think my husband's actually like a better chef than I am. He deals with the meat and does all the things. Yeah. And so that might be kind of, we may balance each other out. I could do the vegetable for sure.
And I love that you said one night a week, because it doesn't have to be going from I cook zero meals a week to now I need to cook 21 meals a week. Start with one and keep it fun. In any behavior that we do, whether it's positive or negative, has the propensity to increase. So if you do that once a week and it becomes kind of this ritual that you look forward to because you make it fun with whatever's fun for you guys, the odds are, oh, we might actually make two meals during that time and have an extra to save for later in the week or the next day. Or maybe you start adding a second night occasionally and it will likely grow without it feeling pressured to do that.
Yes. Yes. Make it fun. I also probably need to find a class. Yeah, I wish you were here. You could teach me how to cook.
I mean, my Cabernash.
I know. I want to come back up your way. I want to know.
I've done virtual classes during COVID. We would do these corporate like team building events, and they're like, "Can you do it virtually?" I'm like, "Well, normally I'm tasting the thing that people are doing to like give them the feedback." But I'm like, "Well, we can try it," and it completely worked. I was shocked.
That's cool. So you can do it. You can do it. Yep. I love that. Mm-hmm. Now I want to talk more about your personal journey. I know you are an athlete. What kind of training were you doing? And you've maybe adjusted, you've tweaked your lifestyle and your training over the years. So we'll talk about that.
So I grew up team sports, you know, junior high, high school. And then, you know, once you have kids, it's harder to like corral 11 other people to like play volleyball and like get everybody's schedules to coordinate. So I think a lot of maybe women gravitate toward individual sports where you can just go whenever it works out. You can still push the stroller. So I got into triathlons for a bit and definitely pushed the envelope on the overtraining side of things and under recovering. So learned a lot from that. And so, you know, the focus had always kind of been taking things from good to great or performance. And that's where the sport performance psychology came in versus, you know, the abnormal psych and just kind of how can we excel? And then it was my second pregnancy. I, long story short, had a stillborn at 8 months in. So, you know, you're all the way basically to the end and my uterus ruptured and I almost didn't make it out of that surgery. And so when you come out of a C-section, you know, you can't work out for 6 weeks. And that was always my mental, emotional release was like a, you know, physical, like just push, grind it out, like tune it out, numb it out. And I didn't have that for 6 weeks. And so you're kind of forced to sit with that discomfort for, you know, long enough. And so the first week, you know, I'm like, all right, people are coming over to bring food and, you know, bring beers and, you know, that's like fun-ish and all. But then that's what I really noticed. I'm like, certain foods, I feel like awesome. Like I'm ready to like conquer the world, recover, like get back to my whatever new norm is. And then other ones, I just felt really heavy and kind of eh. So it was like the first time where I really noticed, because I think I didn't have, you know, the endorphin high and distraction of the working out. And I think that's also a common thing. That's a whole nother rabbit hole. But that's where I really got into more of that holistic functional health of, okay, I was following all these rules. It didn't guarantee anything. There must be something else out there. And when you're in a spot where you're in enough pain, as long as something doesn't hurt you, you're kind of a lot more open to trying different things. So that is where I got a lot more into like Eastern medicine, functional medicine, holistic health. And I was like, I don't really like beets, but if for some reason that's going to help me recover, I will figure out a way to like them. And that's kind of how I got more into healing and what our bodies need for that, because I'd never really had a major injury where that had been a focal point. But then when something like that happens, your world kind of shakes up a bit. You're like, oh, I'm not focused on performance, races, times. I just need to get back to functioning. And so that was kind of the first time I was like, all right, I'm fixing broken and trying to get it back to, you know, par. And that's kind of when I got down or went more into the nutrition programs and just diving deep into all of that. So I do a blend of all of that now. I still love the performance aspect. And I also recognize in maybe a more wise way now, the importance of recovery, the necessity of it for performance and also for healing or just general health. So I think, you know, those situations, while they are no fun in the time, they do add some perspective and depth to your whole picture and how you can relate with people and apply things to, you know, everybody, because everybody's going through something and you don't always know. I mean, some people you do from what they post, but a lot more people you don't know. And you just have a lot more empathy for that and realize it's a balance of all the things.
I'm really sorry to hear that. And, you know, what was that healing process? I mean, it sounds like you, for your mental, you know, mental health, that you were exercising, which a lot of us do because we feel really good, and you can't do that right away after something like that happens, right? So what was that period like? What were you doing for, to take away that pain, so to speak, and heal emotionally?
Well, and that's a great question, because I could walk. I couldn't even lift weights, you know? So walking was it. And then also, you know, just what are your interests? Because so much of my time had been consumed with exercising and, you know, work and exercising. Well, my work was a lot of physical things. And so they were all kind of tied together. And so you're like, what are my hobbies? What are my interests? You know, what do I really want to do? And, you know, my acupuncturist, who I was connected with during that time, she was really helpful and really good at reflecting back. Like, Katie, you're used to operating at an 8, 9, 10 all the time. She's like, why do you run? Why are you up there? Like, are you like, you know, is it kind of like escaping or feeling free? She's like, you got to find your 4, 5, and 6s. And it's like one of those things that you know, but you're like, it kind of applies more to other people. Maybe not me as much, you know, like I'm kind of the exception. And then I actually got pregnant with my now daughter, but I had a blood clot like early on in the pregnancy where they're like, you can't teach classes. Like I used to, you know, teach like weights classes. You can't run. You can't do anything intense. You can walk up to 2 miles a day at like not too fast of a pace. So that's what, a half an hour of walking, you know? Yes. And so that was the top end of my output, which was so much lower than I was before. And, you know, when it's for somebody else, you do it. And when you've had the experience that you've had before, I don't want to do it again. And so you're like, all right, I'll listen to it. And I got to the point where I was like, I couldn't wait to go for my little walk and listen to a podcast and just get outside. And it was very calming. And I got back into reading and just a lot of the other things. So that was kind of a forced avenue to find the 4, 5s, and 6s that I think we all need to find. And so I think when people are high achievers, when they're highly disciplined, when they're achievement oriented, which I think many people are, it's harder to pull back and do the 4, 5s, and 6 because 8, 9, and 10s is kind of all out, balls to the wall. You get accolades for that. It's the badge of honor for being like the most crazed and like the most sleep deprived and the busiest person. but it doesn't lend itself for a well-balanced body or mind. And it's not going to lend itself for optimal performance, optimal health, or just optimal you. And so I think sometimes it takes those experiences to force you to experience something different, because I probably would have resisted it, because, you know, most of the things that we resist are things that we probably actually should be going toward a little bit. Like yoga was so hard for me to get into, and I cognitively knew it would be good for me. And then I always just would rather go for a run or lift weights, you know, or do like the, you know, higher intensity thing. And yeah, it just kind of, you know, once you're kind of forced to experience it, you're like, okay, this can be a better balance. And especially as you get older, your body has different needs. And so I like to incorporate that with people, because I think many people need permission to recover and like almost put it on their to-do item, and permission to find the 4, 5s, and 6s, and not just permission, but it's part of the assignment.
Yes. Yes. So what do you recommend as far as recovery for people? Is that like, mm-hmm. are you saying one day of not doing anything at all? Because I know a lot of people, they say, well, I go on a 3-mile walk on my recovery day, but that's not really recovery, is it?
Well, so it depends how it's perceived to the person. It depends what else they have going on, but we still want circulation through our body, because, you know, blood flow is transporting nutrients and oxygen to all of our cells. And if we're just sitting all day, that's not going to happen. So I would say a recovery day can still be a 30-minute walk, you know, not like weighted vest type of thing, or, you know, like crazy brisk or like crazy hills, but something where you're thinking, my heart rate's coming up a little bit, I could easily chat with somebody, you know, just, I feel really good afterwards. I feel refreshed. And that's a good way to look at training too. If you feel totally white 1 to 2 hours after the workout, and that wasn't necessarily the plan for it, because, you know, there's times where we do overreach to get the training effect we're looking for, but that shouldn't be all the time. It should have a planned longer recovery at some point around it. But if you're feeling drained 1 to 2 hours after your workout, something in your overall stress bucket is too much to handle that workout too. In the stress bucket might not all be physical. Emotional, mental stressors, you know, contribute the same way that physical ones do. And so it kind of, you know, it all comes back to the person. We're all different. We're all, even our own self at different times has different needs. And, you know, I think it's great to at minimum walk 20, 30 minutes a day, including your recovery day, because that keeps the blood flow circulating and will help, you know, move through the muscles to help them recover faster. So they actually show that walking helps you recover from your gym workouts faster.
Yeah, it is true. I've started working out at a new fitness studio and doing more weights, and kind of I am feeling a little wiped out after my workouts because I'm really pushing myself in like a group fitness setting, you know? Then if I can walk the next day, I do feel, oh, okay, like you're walking off the soreness a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're like excited to go back to the gym when you're not pounding it. And I think that's something for me. I was just so used to grinding it and pounding it that I didn't realize how tired I was until you experienced something different. Because that's all you know. You just push through it. You know, that's just what you do.
Yes. That's what we all do. Our culture, like you said, rewards that. So we're all doing that in some way or another. Yep. Okay, Katie, to wrap up, I would love to know the 5 things that we should be focusing on for food, fitness, and recovery.
Sure. For food, go real food. So things that don't have labels. I know we get taught a lot, how do you read a label? I love the things that actually don't have labels. So you think of the shrimp, the steak, the potato, the orange, the celery. So real foods versus bags, boxes, or cans or powders when available. And then, movement. Move every day. Do some hard things where you get breathless, and also have some of your 4, 5s, and 6s where it's just mellow, active recovery. And, most people tend to gravitate toward the middle and do the same thing every day. Let's get some variability into that. And then recovery is so important for all the rest of the things to happen right for the performance, physically, mentally. And so create margins in your day for transition, for sitting down to read, for breath work, meditation, whatever it is that like resonates with you. It's not you being lazy. It's not you being, you know, selfish. It's necessary for optimal performance.
I love it. You have inspired me to take some cooking classes with my child, with my son, and cook together as a family. So I'm really excited to implement that. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. If you will, shout out where people can find you.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to hear what you guys make and how it is and see some pictures.
Yes, I will. I will.
And then, my website is the best spot. So if you do want to see some videos of people, kids, adults making things, my Instagram handle is mypeak365. And then my website is also mypeak365.com. And that's the best way to find me and get inspired, whether it's meals or books or podcasts or just general tips. So that's where you can find me.
I love it. Thank you so much, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Cinnamon Effect. If you enjoyed our time together, don't forget to hit that follow button on your podcast app and sprinkle a little love by leaving us a 5-star rating and a quick review. Your support means the world to me. For even more goodness, check out the show notes where you'll find links to some of my favorite products. And don't forget to visit thecinnamoneffect.com to connect with me directly or to grab your TCE Gratitude Journal, your next step towards a more grateful life. I can't wait to spice things up with you again next time. Stay vibrant, stay inspired, and remember to add a little cinnamon to your life every day.